Okay, I have a question for you. You're going to have to listen. How many, you're not going to know whether to raise your hand if you don't hear the question. How many of you have ever regretted a commitment that you made? You said you would do something, but it ended up being more than you wanted it to be, and so you regretted having done it. Now, see, the people that aren't raising their hands weren't listening. And that's the truth. Okay, we're going to watch a short clip, and because there's a woman here who knows just how we feel about that. Well, we all know what Judy Benjamin have to do. And although I don't necessarily recommend the movie, I think the clip communicates the problem to us very well. All too often, I'm afraid, we're like Judy Benjamin. We commit to something, and then later to our horror, we realize that the obligation is more than we felt we were signing up for. And so we don't want to pay that cost. We want out of the obligation that we have signed up to do. We feel that we enlisted in a different army, that we took a different job, that we joined a different church, or perhaps even that we married a different man than we got. And we begin to believe that surely God would not expect me to stand by my words with this kind of a situation. Surely God understands that the cost is too great. I cannot pay this price to be faithful to what I committed to do. This week we studied the person in Jonathan. And we see in Jonathan someone who probably felt that he got more than he had signed up for, that he was forced to do more than he had signed up to take on. But Jonathan was faithful despite the cost that he had before him. And because God calls us to be equally as faithful as Jonathan, we can learn a lot from him about what it means to be faithful to our words and to be faithful to the obligations that we take on. The first thing that we learn from Jonathan is that Jonathan's ultimate commitment was to God and his kingdom. He was faithful because he sought God's kingdom above all other things. Let's review the background of our story. And you know it, you probably just talked about it. I'm sure you remember that Jonathan was the heir to the throne of Israel because his father was King Saul. And if you remember the story, because of Saul's disobedience, God had rejected him as king. He said in 1 Samuel 13 that he was going to replace Saul with a man after his own heart. And Saul knew this, and I know that Jonathan knew this as well. Then David entered the story, and you saw that the prophet Samuel came to David, and he anointed him as God's chosen king of Israel. But it was years before David actually came to the throne. And in the intervening years, David became a faithful member of Saul's own household. He was a faithful warrior for Saul, and then he was a faithful son-in-law to Saul. But later events proved that during those intervening years, and sometime early in those years, Saul became aware that David was to be the next king. He and his household learned that David had been anointed, that he was God's choice and not Jonathan. So with that in mind, let's turn to 1 Samuel 18, and I'm only going to have you turn to the verses in 1 Samuel, so once you turn there, you kind of stay in 1 Samuel, and we'll put the other verses up on the board. 1 Samuel 18, 1-4. When David had finished talking with Saul, Jonathan and David became bound together in close friendship. Jonathan loved David as much as he did his own life. Saul retained David on that day and did not allow him to return to his father's house. Jonathan then made a covenant with David, for he loved him as much as he did his own life. Jonathan took off the robe he was wearing and gave it to David, along with the rest of his gear, including his sword, his bow, and even his belt. Covenants are solemn agreements made before God, and in this case, this was a covenant of mutual protection and loyalty between Jonathan and David. Jonathan approached David about making the covenant because as his superior, as the prince of Israel, he had to be the one to approach the lesser person about a covenant. And we see that clearly he did it because he loved David. But I could think he was motivated by something else here. He was prompted by his faith and by the Spirit of God to make this covenant with David. Because Jonathan knew that David would be the next ruler of Israel, in this covenant he committed his loyalty to him. Now why do I say that? In the Bible Knowledge Commentary it says this, sword, bow, belt. These were treasured items that would not have been casually surrendered. With these gifts, Jonathan ratified his covenant with David. In retrospect, Jonathan's action was symbolic of the transfer of royal power from Saul's family to David. With David's acceptance of the sword, he became who Jonathan was, the heir apparent to the throne of Israel. By his actions, Jonathan acknowledged God's decision that David should rule. And he stepped aside. Jonathan was concerned for God's kingdom. He knew that God had anointed David. And because he trusted in God, because he was following God's kingdom rather than his own, he said, I will be loyal to God's choice. This is God's choice. I have to put myself aside and be loyal to him. And as time went on, he proved faithful to be loyal to David as the next king. And he was faithful to his word no matter what. No matter what happened, he stood by what he had promised. I really doubt that at this point Jonathan knew how much pressure he would have from his own family to renege on this promise and to try to even kill David when he had the opportunity. Maybe he believed that his father Saul would trust God and obey God, knowing that David was to be the next king. But that didn't happen, did it? Instead, Saul put as much pressure as he could on his son to take his side in this. Jonathan had to be faithful to his word in defiance of and in opposition to his own father. That had to have been very, very difficult. Turn over two chapters to 1 Samuel 20. Now here, David, this is when David told Jonathan that his father was trying to kill him, and Jonathan had trouble understanding that. Beginning in verse 8, we see David speaking to Jonathan. He said, you must be loyal to his your servant, speaking of himself, for you have made a covenant with your servant in the Lord's name. If I am guilty, you yourself kill me. Why bother taking me to your father? Jonathan said, far be it from you to suggest this. If I were at all aware that my father had decided to harm you, wouldn't I tell you about it? See, his loyalty was with David over his own father. David said to Jonathan, who will tell me if your father answers you harshly? Jonathan said, come on, let's go out to the field. And you know the rest of the story, that he did let him know that indeed Saul wanted to kill him. Jonathan promised loyalty to David against all foes, and that greatest foe turned out to be his own father. He had to protect David against his own father. Now think about how hard that would be. I think all through these scriptures you see that Jonathan loved his father. This was a hard thing for him to do, but he stood by his loyalty to David, his promises to follow David because he had said it and because it was for God's kingdom's sake. In order to fulfill his covenant with David, he not only had to oppose his own father, but he also had to act against his own self-interest. Again, in chapter 20, beginning in verse 30, Saul became angry with Jonathan and said to him, you stupid traitor, didn't I realize that to your own disgrace and to the disgrace of your mother's nakedness, you have chosen the son of Jesse? For as long as this son of Jesse is alive on the earth, you and your kingdom will not be established. Now send some men and bring him to me, for he is as good as dead. Jonathan responded to his father Saul, why should he be put to death? What has he done? Then Saul threw his spear at Jonathan in order to strike him down. So Jonathan was convinced that his father had decided to kill David.
Jonathan got up from the table enraged. He did not eat any food on the second day of the new moon, for he was upset that his father had humiliated David. Saul reminded Jonathan here that his covenant with David meant that he would never be king, and that he had chosen David over his own family. Clearly, Saul knew what had happened with the transfer of the royal insignia, Jonathan's sword, to David, that he had transferred the kingdom to him as well. Saul was fighting God's will here, and Jonathan remained true to God's kingdom, to God's will, and to the words he had spoken, despite all this pressure from his father, that his father would even try to throw a sword at him. Despite all that, he remained true to his words. The bottom line here is that Jonathan was faithful to his words despite the cost of that obligation, despite the cost of alienation from his own father, because he was trusting God with the future. He trusted God with the outcome. Down in 20:42, it says, Jonathan said to David, "Go in peace, for the two of us have sworn together in the name of the Lord, saying, 'The Lord will be between me and you and between my descendants and your descendants forever.'" He was saying, God is the witness to the oaths that we swore, and God will see that we carry them out. He expected Jonathan and David to be faithful because he was the witness to their sworn oaths to one another. And then look ahead to 1 Samuel 23:16-18. At this point, David was running from his life for Saul, and there probably had been several years in the intervening chapters here. But Jonathan still loved David, and he actually sought David out where he was as he ran from his father. So it says here in verse 16, "Then Jonathan, son of Saul, left and went to David at Horesh. He encouraged him through God. He said to him, 'Don't be afraid, for the hand of my father Saul cannot find you. You will rule over Israel, and I will be your second in command. Even my father Saul realizes this.' When the two of them had made a covenant before the Lord, David stayed on at Horesh, but Jonathan went to his house." Why did Jonathan believe that Saul could not find David? Because he believed that God was in charge of the outcome, and that God had determined that David would be the king, and God would see that it happened. He trusted God with the outcome of what had happened here. Jonathan was a man who spoke his word and stuck by it, and God calls us to do the same thing. When we face a situation that we might say, "This is more than I signed up for," we are called to remain faithful despite the cost, just as Jonathan was. Just as Jonathan's word was based on God's will and his kingdom purposes, God calls us to put his will and his kingdom purposes first. We're to seek his kingdom with all that we say and we do. And as you think about this, this really has two aspects. The first is we shouldn't say things that don't align with God's will and God's kingdom. We should consult God before we agree to do things. What does God want me to do in this situation? We shouldn't commit unless we're sure God is leading us to commit to it. And second, we seek God's kingdom by doing what we said we would do, even if we never consulted God about it. Because God's will is that when we say we're going to do it, we remain faithful to our words. And he expects us to do that. We seek his kingdom by standing by our words, because that gives a glimpse of godliness to other people, because God is a faithful God and he stands by what he says to us. In the Lord's Prayer, Jesus taught his disciples to say, "May your kingdom come, may your will be done on earth as it is in heaven." We are to seek his kingdom above all else. And you know, when we have done that, it's easier to trust God when we've committed to something and things seem to go wrong. Because we know this is what God called me to do. I may not understand what's going on here. I may not understand what doesn't seem to be working out well, but this is what God called me to do. And so it's easier to remain faithful to what we've committed to. But to do that, we need to be careful with what we say. And one of the ways to do that is to avoid rash words. Don't just quickly talk. Proverbs is full of wisdom about our words, and I'm going to just read a couple of the verses that deal with this. In Proverbs 13:3, it says, "The one who guards his words guards his life, but whoever is talkative will come to ruin." Now, that applies to some of us, ladies, talkative. We need to think before we speak. Proverbs 29:20, "Do you see someone who is hasty in his words? There is more hope for a fool than for him." I mean, that's not real positive, is it? We're not to just quickly talk. We're to think before we speak. James 1:19 says, "Understand this, my dear brothers and sisters. Let every person be quick to listen, slow to speak, slow to anger." I mean, those are just good general principles in any situation. Even if you're not committing to something, think before you speak. Be slow to make a comment. And there's a warning here to those of us who quickly agree to things. "Oh, yeah, I'll do that. Sure, I'll be there. Whatever." Don't speak without thinking through what you're agreeing to and consult God first. Make sure it aligns with His kingdom and what He would have you to do. I know a woman, not someone here at our church, but somebody I've known for years, and several times through the years I have seen her commit to do some volunteer ministry project, some job, some volunteer job, and several times I saw her back out of it. And she would always say, "You know, I just didn't pray about it enough first." As if that let her off the hook, as if that made it okay that she didn't pray about it first. So now she didn't have to be faithful to what she had promised to do. God expects us to be faithful to our words. If you don't pray about it, He still expects you to be faithful to your words. I suggest that you do pray about it. That's better. But if you haven't, you still must be faithful to your words. And you know, it's so easy in our society to get so busy, isn't it? And people want us to do this and that. God has things for His kingdom He wants us to do, and that is to be our priority. So we should be praying about everything that we agree to do, how we spend our time, who we spend it with. Before we agree, consult God. Several weeks ago, I put something on my calendar for last week that I really felt like God would have me do. However, as the event neared, my life just got busier and busier. And as I saw it coming on my calendar, I just was dreading the whole thing. Oh my gosh, I can't believe I have to do this. Why in the world did I ever say yes to it? I just don't have time to do this. There's too much going on. But I knew I had to do it. First, I believed that God wanted me to do it. Second, I said I would do it. Third, I was teaching this lesson tonight. But let's hope I would have done it without the lesson tonight. But what I ended up doing is I just simply told God, "I don't have the energy to do all of this. I need you to give me the strength and the energy to follow through with this commitment." And the truth is, I'm standing here tonight, aren't I? I lived to do it. I made it through it all. And you know, even though I dreaded it, it ended up being a good experience. But we're to seek God's will above all else, even when it's costly, because His will is to be faithful to what we say. But you know, for many believers, that cost is far beyond just having a busy week. Far beyond just having a busy week. When we believe in Jesus, we join God's army. And armies can be tough. They're not always pleasant. There are believers who are put in prison and killed because they're faithful to their belief in Jesus. Sometimes we could pay by losing friends or losing jobs because we're unwilling to go along with what they want us to do. It can be costly. We may think that the army we signed up for is the one where we just walk with God every day and we're happy all the day and He makes things good for us. Everything ahead of us is going to be rosy. Life is going to be happy and we'll never have any bumps in the road. But you know, being in God's army doesn't mean things always go well. Sometimes He sends us straight into a battlefront and it's difficult. In this army, it's not okay if we don't follow through with our commitment. He calls us to do that. Seeking God's kingdom means we're to be faithful even when it requires sacrifice and even when it hurts. And sometimes, even when God points us in a particular direction, it's going to be hard in front of us. And we need to know that. That's what it's like in God's army. Loyalty often requires sacrifice. Faithfulness means that our loyalty and our commitment are going to show the world something they don't see very often. And it's what God is like. When we're true to our marriage vows in the midst of unhappiness, when we're faithful to the promises we make to others, when we work to the best of our abilities because we're committed to a job, when we faithfully pay off our homes even when we had to sell them at a deficit and we've got to keep paying to pay what we promised to pay, when we do all these things, we show something of Jesus that is very lacking in our world, and it brings God's kingdom to earth. We're also faithful to what we say we're going to do because we do know God is a witness to our words. He heard what we said and He expects us to follow through. We recognize that He's the witness to our words of commitment. Matthew 12, 36 to 37 says this, "I tell you that on the day of judgment, people will give an account for every worthless word they speak. For by your words you'll be justified, and by your words you'll be condemned." God takes our words seriously and someday will bring us to light. And of course, that's more than the promises we make. It's what we talk about, which is why it's good not to be too talkative, because we say things we shouldn't say. But the day will come when He asks us why we didn't keep our promises. And I don't want to have to answer that. I want to keep my promises. Finally, we remain faithful despite the cost because we're able to trust God with the outcome, just as we saw Jonathan do. We trust Him with the future. Romans 8, 28 through 29, that I quoted a couple of weeks ago, says, "And we know that all things work together for good to those who love God, who are called according to His purpose. Because those whom He foreknew, He also predestined to become conformed to the image of His Son, that His Son would be the firstborn among many brothers and sisters." We trust that God is at work for His kingdom and within our hearts as we walk in faithfulness to what He has shown us to do. I have some friends who have a youth pastor in their family, and the previous church where he went, when he and his wife believed that God was calling them to go someplace else, they put their house on the market, and after over a year of having it on the market, they lost thousands of dollars just to sell it to get out from under the mortgage. In his more recent church, just a week and a half ago, he was laid off. Because of our economic situation, the church giving was down, and they determined that he should be laid off. 3 days later, his wife was laid off from her job. They're in a mess. I mean, they don't have any more savings. It's all gone because of the sale of the first house. And we might look at that and say, well, maybe they didn't listen to God about buying this house, selling that house. We don't know that. We have no idea. We know they've been trying as the best of their ability to follow what God has shown them to do. But they're very discouraged, they're very down, and he's thinking of leaving the ministry. And I understand why. I understand why he's discouraged. But I wonder if his feelings are not made worse because perhaps they have believed that being in God's army meant everything would go okay. Perhaps they believed that because they were working for God, that nothing bad would happen to them. Perhaps they expected something different. This is more than they feel that they signed up for. So ladies, we have to be careful that we're not expecting something that's not true. God hasn't promised those things to us. He hasn't promised that just because we're serving Him, everything's going to go okay and be rosy in our life. We'll be happy, and we'll be happy all the day. All I know is if they are truly called into ministry and they truly promise God that that's what they would do, they have no choice but to move forward and find another place to serve because that's their promise before God. And they have to trust that he loves them and that the outcome is in his hand. It's going to be a big leap of faith. They have to believe that God will take care of them. And I believe that's what they'll do. God blesses obedience, but blessing does not always mean that everything goes well. Look at Jonathan. He obeyed, but he never lived to be second in command to David, did he? He and his father were both killed in battle, and he never served David as he promised to do. But I believe he was blessed because in his heart he knew he was seeking God's kingdom above all else. He had inner peace because his loyalty was placed in the right place and that he followed God all the way along and he was true to his word despite how difficult it must have been to stand against his own family. And I know that when he entered heaven, he had abundant reward when Jesus said, "Well done, my good and faithful servant." So the question to all of us is, will we be faithful to the words that we have said to God and to other people, even when the cost is more than we feel we signed up for? Will we be faithful to husbands who have not been what we expected? Will we be faithful to the ministry that God has given you? Because he's designed each of us to serve him in some way. Will you be a faithful employee even when the job turns out to require more than you feel like you're being paid to do? Will you be faithful to whatever words you rashly spoke and now you wish you could take them back, but you can't? And I pray we'll become women of our words. Will you be faithful to this small group that you're part of? Because it's, you know, signing up for these groups is not about you. It's partially about those other women because you're here each week to encourage them. God, you're not in these groups by accident. God has placed you there, and you're not only here for God to work in your life, but you're here because God's going to use you to work in their lives. Will you be faithful? That's what God calls us to do. Let's pray. Father, I know that this sounds really easy when I talk about it. It is not so easy. It is not easy to be in a marriage that's unhappy. It is not easy to be in a job situation where your boss is not treating you fairly. It is not easy to stand by what we said we would do when the cost later appears to be so high. It's not easy. And I pray for all of us. We know that we can only do this because of your grace and your strength. We cannot do this in and of ourselves. We thank you that you give us your Spirit so that we have the power to be faithful. We have the power to do what we promised you will do and what we have told one another will do. You give us the power to be faithful to the vows we make at marriage. You have the power to call us to be faithful to the promises to pay things that we have bought on credit. Father, we just turn to you, telling you that we are totally dependent upon you and what you're going to do in our lives. We ask you to make us faithful women. We want to show forth what Jesus is like to a world around us. When people renege on the promises they made all the time, help us to be faithful. Help us to follow through with the commitments that we make. We look to you for the power to do it. And we thank you now for how your Spirit is going to move to do that in our lives. In Jesus' name, amen.